Welcome back to Film Vloggers. We review films and flog dead horses, so you don't have to. Is this week's film choice a complete waste of your viewing time? Much like flogging slash beating a dead horses, get it? Please head over to www.filmvloggers.com to check out all of our previous vloggings. And while you're there, maybe hang out for a while, look around and vote for our next film. Click on vote, or visit www.filmvloggers.com/vote. Are you an idiot? If so, please check out our idiot's guide to reviewing us, where even a big dummy like you can leave us a red-hot review. Here at Film Vloggers, we pride ourselves on offering one-star content with five-star effort. Once on the website, please click on Idiot's Guide, or visit us at www.filmvloggers.com/review-us. That should have been Idiot's Guide. My fault, I didn't change the URL. Annoying. Once again, filmvloggers.com/review-us. Believe it or not, we now have a Patreon. I know what you're thinking. You have the audacity to ask us to pay to receive more of this. Pause for dramatic effect. Yes. We have a Patreon exclusive show called Nitpickers. I think you'll like it. Please visit www.filmvloggers.com/support-us. Again, that hyphen is annoying, should have removed it. Or head straight to our Patreon page. patreon.com/filmwafflers. No idea why I did film wafflers. Another mistake. Where you can support us for as little as £1 British or £1.50. And while you're on the website, punch that big purple subscribe button and tell a friend about the vlog. Wife, husband, boyfriend, girlfriend, partner, mistress, your nan, granddad, your kids. They can tell their friends. They can tell their friends at school about the vlog. But in all seriousness, this really helps the podcast grow and enables us to enrich or ruin the lives of the hundreds of millions of earlobes we haven't reached yet.
Welcome to Film Vloggers. Grab a vlog and join us as we go to work on our latest film offering and try to answer the question, does this film feel like flogging a dead horse? The answer is probably yes, but let's find out.
So the River Wild today, Ben, how are you doing?
Yeah, good. Yeah, not too bad. Yeah. Ready for some more bacon. Ready for some water bacon.
Yeah, I mean, how many bacons are we into now? Is this our fifth or sixth bacon, this?
Yeah, enough. Yeah, plenty, yeah. We're getting through them. I'm still enthusiastic about the bacon. So, you know, yeah, let's keep going.
Oh, it's very good. I'm getting increasingly fond of bacon. Anyway, this is the River Wild, 1994, directed by Curtis Hanson, who's got a pretty tidy set of films behind him. This is the guy who did, first before this, The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. Have you ever seen that?
I haven't actually, no.
Yeah, he directed that. It's about a nanny who starts working for this family, but it becomes pretty evident that her intentions are basically to try and steal the child and kind of destroy the family. It's quite good. Sort of, you know, slightly daft, but it's a decent thriller. And then LA Confidential, I think, was just after this, which is, you know, obviously fairly highly regarded.
My only problem with that film is Kim Basinger or Basinger. Mm. Yeah, like a pretty just, yeah, didn't like the performance, Oscar, apparently.
Well, maybe it was one of those films that, you know, was Oscar worthy, but they just didn't really know what category to stick it in.
Well, just give it to someone else. Give it to Spacey, yeah. You know, I think, can't say Spacey's name anymore, but
well, yeah. Quite, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was actually, well, let's not get into that now. I think, and then the other one of note, which I picked up on was 8 Mile, the Eminem biopic, which I actually thoroughly enjoy. I think it's quite good, a bit of 8 Mile. It's Meryl Streep, bit of bacon, and a bit of John C. Reilly, like you said, a young John C. Reilly looking reasonable here, I'd say.
Looking about the same, really. He's a young John C. Reilly, but he's, you know, I think he's like late 20s in this.
I don't think his hairline's changed at all. I think just in this, it's got a slightly closer cropped Barnett, which I think gives his hair the appearance of being slightly fuller. I think that is the way of things. I think, you know, balding men tend to keep the hair sort of close.
Probably cropped. Like mine, to be honest. As mine gets longer, I start to kind of notice that I've got a bit of receding going.
I was actually going to say, you know, maybe you should heed some advice from old John. You know,
I'd like to think that maybe me and John have got quite similar hairlines. So, you know, if he's rocking at the similar hairline, you know, 30 years later, there could be some hope for me.
Yeah. And that's fair enough. Yeah. It's Meryl Streep. Yes. The Meryl Streep's in this, yeah.
Who? How the hell does she get in this?
I mean, the thing is with Meryl is that I do find her, she's the sort of self-proclaimed queen of Hollywood. I do find her slightly nauseating. She is very much at the Hollywood lovey brigade. But she is, she's a good actress, there's no question.
The self-proclaimed queen of Hollywood? I've never heard that before.
Well, I think people always talk about her as the sort of godmother of Hollywood, you know, the woman who watches over all these young starlets. And there was some mention whenever all this stuff came about, all these allegations about, you know, what did Meryl Streep, you know, what did Meryl Streep know what was going on? because she had a finger in all these pies. She knew kind of everyone already there, and he was coming in. And there was all this stuff about what did she know? And she claimed that she didn't know anything, which I find hard to believe. What have we got here? So we kick off. Meryl Streep as a Gale. Character's called Miss Gale.
Some Gale.
Yeah, she's rowing a boat, isn't she? And she's rowing along the river. The credits are rolling. We introduce that she's obviously a bit of a rower, and she seems to be racing. I kind of got this as that she gets under a bridge just in time before a train passes overhead. So this is clearly some kind of timing exercise or race.
Boston, I believe. They're in Boston.
Boston.
Yeah, I've been to Boston. You know, nice place. Nice area.
Well, he's very well travelled, is Ben. You know, he's been everywhere.
In a previous life, maybe she was a pro, or, you know, whatever. And then the music just kicks up a notch. Is the sun setting or is it rising?
I think this is an early... I would have said this isn't... She looks like an early morning rower.
Yeah, I'd say, yeah. So, yeah, sun's rising. It's all looking pretty good. Overall, it's pretty well shot. Yeah,
it's good. Pretty good. Well, I mean, obviously, the setting helps a lot with that. It's very picturesque. But I mean, overall, I think we'll get to this at the end. But overall, it's on the surface of it, it's kind of faultless. You know, it's not. There's no bagginess in the script or the storytelling. It's all pretty tight. Script's actually pretty decent. I think there's some quite good interactions. And like you say, the cinematography is good. The setting, the pacing. I think it's, you know, you can't really fault it. But she goes in, doesn't she? She's the next shot after the credits have started is her back at home, and she's busy in a bedroom with the two kids running around her. The son should be mentioned. Rourke is the son.
Well, yeah, I'm sure we'll be talking about Rourke a few times. But yeah, well, as you mentioned, we may as well have a quick chat about it. Yeah, well, it's, you know, what's going on?
What? No.
What the fuck is Rourke?
Yeah, I'm not sure what that name is. I mean, initially for the first half, I thought I was mishearing it, but then I actually put the subtitles on. I thought it was maybe, you know, well, I didn't know. I'd absolutely
how are we, no how are we spelling Rourke in the subtitle? How's that getting spelled?
It's Rourke. I think it's the same as Mickey Rourke. Is it? Is that how you spell Mickey Rourke?
I thought Mickey Rourke was Rourke, something like that. I thought there was a U in there. For Mickey Rourke.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I think this is an A. But this kid, actually, it should be noted that this kid also turned up in Jurassic Park. He was the boy. You know, it was the sister and brother in Jurassic Park. He was a little boy.
Equally as foul, I'd say, in Jurassic Park.
Yeah, he was quite screamy, wasn't he, in that? I remember the daughter was quite good, but he was a bit of a...
He's carried those screams over to the River Wild. You know, some of those screams are just unbelievable.
It's a slightly nauseating little boy. But we get all this, and it's clear from the conversation that's going on that they're planning some sort of trip for the little boy's birthday. What do you call this? Kayaking trip.
It's white water rafting, isn't it? That's why she's called Whitewater, that we find out later, her nickname.
Oh, correct. Even before the husband has arrived home, we can tell that he's getting slightly shafted by his family, because his son, before he's even come into the picture, is saying, you know, he's going to cancel again. And Meryl's not doing a great job of defending him. He then turns up, the husband, and he's got his briefcase, he's got his glasses on, he looks like he's had a hard day at work. And he says, Meryl, I'm sorry, I need to have a word about this. And before the kids have even got out of the bedroom, Meryl's literally sitting there going, you know, what are we to you? So he's just come back from his day at work, gets showered up by his wife, shafted by his kids, and then he tries to get, the dog sitting in his chair or something. What's the dog called?
Maggie.
Maggie. The dog's not even listening to him. So, I mean, I feel like this guy's getting a pretty tough ride at home.
You know, I'm not sure, but it sounds like you're taking the side of the dad.
Yeah, I mean, so I think from the early stage of this, I feel like this guy is unfairly treated. But there are a couple of things, especially when he actually arrives at the lake, at the river, when he's already told them that he won't be there, but he then surprises them by, you know, getting a late trip just before they're about to depart. And he turns up at the river with his briefcase. He's got his work briefcase with him.
I thought for a second he'd brought the laptop and, he shoved an antenna in the back pocket. He was going to try and get some Wi-Fi out on the rapids.
Well, I think his intention was to have a full day at the office in that boat. he's got his leather bound work briefcase and, you know, a variety of whatever kind of drawing equipment he needs to do it. He's an architect, we find out later.
You know, for Rourke, Christ, Rourke. He doesn't understand the setup, does he? All he sees is his dad just kind of constantly just letting him down, not turning up, missing the birthday 3 years in a row. That's all he sees. Just sees his dad disappointing him constantly.
I feel, do you know what it is? For me, that this thing, it's a recurring theme in films where, you know, there's the dad who always lets the kid down. And I've never really understood it. And it's usually set up in that, you know, the father will miss his son's school play in the evening or whatever. And it's usually because, you know, he's at work or he's had to stay late for a meeting. And they're obviously living in this ridiculous apartment in Boston. They're able just to take, I mean, Streep's able to just take time off work and go and have this birthday extravaganza. Like, how is that getting paid for? How is that getting sustained? If the guy's not got this high-end job, which like demands him to be there, why is everyone turning? I don't get it. This is a recurring thing.
As I'm saying, the kid doesn't get that, does he? He just sees his dad not turning up to events. Rourke's not sitting there going like, well, you know, the dad's bringing the big bucks. He's paying for my Swiss Army knife, which I'm going to get later. The kid doesn't sit there and go, well, you know, he's bringing home the bacon.
What are we, you?
Yeah. And then goes, kids, you know, go to the room. So, you know, the kids are barely down the fucking corridor when she's, you know, when she starts blowing out. Even the dog Maggie is just going, you know, Tom, you know, I'm just not sure about this bloke. You know, he's just not turning up to the birthday party and I've just had enough of it.
Yeah, the cream-coloured Labrador's not having any of Tom. He's not happy with his performance at all. But yeah, so we get all this, and it seems that, you know, he's going to cancel again. He's not going to be able to turn up. Some big project's got ongoing, which the father has to, you know, draw some blueprints up for or whatever. And we then get the scene where Meryl Streep has arrived at wherever the, you know, wherever this lake is. Where do you know where this is? Is it, this looks like Colorado or Rockies or something, is it?
It's, yeah, okay, yeah, no, it, like, it's like maybe like Montana. That kind of area, potentially.
Well, I mean, you're more well-travelled in America.
Should have probably looked into that to confirm.
So they've arrived, her and the kids have arrived at this river, and she's talking with a mother who obviously live out there in the country, and it's revealed through this conversation that the husband's actually deaf. So Meryl Streep's father's deaf. And I think Streep is pouring out all of her problems to her mother, who actually, quite rightly at this point, for me anyway, from my perspective, she goes, you know, you don't know what hard is. You know, my husband's deaf. You're blowing out because your husband can't, you know, turn up for this jolly in the country here.
Our generation, you know, you don't just throw in the towel. Absolutely spot on.
I mean, she very much highlights that this is very much first world problems. But yeah, it's then at this bit when I think old Rourke is busy buying some paraphernalia for the trip from some little store that's been set up next to the river. And Bacon enters the picture. Good old Bacon steps in. He's got his cap on, and I think he buys some medical kits, medikits from the stall.
What are we saying for Bacon? Bacon Hair Patrol. What are we saying for that hair?
Bacon Hair Patrol.
I think he's looking very Footloose-ish.
Well, so it's one of these, isn't it? Where when we first introduced to him, you know, he's got the cap on, pulled down quite low. But of course, Bacon is so distinctive looking, you know exactly who it is. And then he whips the cap off in this sort of magic trick arrangement. And he's got this hair, which is just perfectly hairsprayed. Again, you can see every single individual strand. I mean, I don't think hat hair is a problem for Bacon. He just doesn't seem to have that problem.
No, I think the cap was just resting on top of the hair. I don't think it was actually, you know, making an indent in the hair. I think it was just literally just sitting on top of it.
I think that's
probably why he just gave it away. He was just like, oh, you know, I don't need this cap. The hair's very much under control.
Yeah, I think basically the hairs have been sort of piercing the hat. Yeah, he's got a good mane in this, I'd say. I'd say it's slightly, in terms of the, you know, if you're talking about hair patrol, I'd say it's slightly more kept than Footloose. It's looking a little bit more under control. But yeah, still very much feathered. How do you feel about Bacon's hairdo in this?
He's trimmed it up, hasn't he, since Flatliners and Tremors. I think it's certainly looking a little bit more respectable. I think in this, he's maybe looking even thinner and sort of sickly than he normally does. Like, he's looking really thin in this. He doesn't actually look as bad when he gets the top off later when they're doing some fly fishing, because of course you've got to get the top off when you fly fish. I just noticed his arms, you know, and I'm whatever, you can be, you know, be whatever size you want, but I think Baker could just do just a little bit of mass on that body, just a little bit.
It's an interesting word choice that you say, sickly. I think that is the thing. I think with Bacon, with the way I see Bacon, is obviously, you know, he's got a certain amount of charisma and charm about him. You know, he's obviously a good looking bloke for a lot of women, but he does straddle that line between handsome and sickly. You know, he could be a kind of quite an ill, creepy sort of presence.
Is he a good looking man for women? Is he a sex symbol, Bacon?
I think he probably is. Yeah, I mean, his Footloose character, wasn't he?
Footloose. I guess Footloose. Yeah.
No, he was absolutely. He was being voted. I mean, he was in like G, what's that bloody magazine called? HQ. GQ. What's it called?
Some GQ.
It was GQ, you know, 100 sexiest men. You know, of course, I didn't ever buy. I didn't. It's not that.
Sorry,
I bought,
is that confirmed? Have you just pulled that your butt?
That's confirmed. No. That's confirmed. He was one of GQ's 100 sexiest men. You know, in Hollywood or so in the last.
From what year was this? Sorry, delving in deep.
No, this wasn't. This was in the north. This was sometime, you know, post 2000. This was not, you know, back in his head. You know,
this was post 2000, right? Okay.
I think there's no question. Whenever you see Bacon, you do. I mean, certainly for me, I always feel, you know, it's in a safe pair of hands. And I think that is owing to his charisma. And I think he's, you know, he's definitely got some. He's definitely got star power. He was very much, and still is in a lot of ways. He's not been anything for a while, but he still very much is a, you know, a movie star, isn't he? You know, he's a sort of leading man.
I think we both agree that since doing this these films of Bacon, we have a newfound respect and admiration for him. And I never thought he was a bad actor, but I just probably didn't realise how much of actually a solid actor he was and how much of a good screen presence he was.
So old Bacon, he sort of, during this whole thing over the counter, he sort of befriends the little boy and sort of goes, oh, what's going on? The little boy tells him that he's here with his mother and sister and they're going to go down the river and on the boat. And he sort of, they have a bit of a moment and Bacon gives him his cap, gives the little boy his cap. And so that's it. And then Bacon then speaks to Meryl Streep briefly. And, you know, it's a little bit of flirtation, a bit of cheekiness. And of course, this is then broken by the husband then turns up, as we said before, with his briefcase. And, you know, everyone's kind of like the kids, Streep, they're kind of like, oh, you know, your father's arrived. You know, here he is. He's got the fucking briefcase.
I think Bacon's already set off by this stage. So Bacon sets off, as you said, that there is this odd sort of sexual chemistry between Bacon and Meryl throughout the film. And it's still there to a point even after it all goes haywire. But I think he sets off. So it's him, it's Kevin Bacon, a guy called Frank, and you've got John C. Reilly, who's, oh Christ, who's John C. Reilly? What's his
brother? So John C. Reilly.
Terry?
Yeah.
So you've got that, and then Bacon sort of, he signals that he's with those two over there on that boat, and he kind of goes, oh, I wish I was on your boat. You know, you see what I'm dealing with over there. You don't ever quite find out what's going on, but I think they've had some sort of falling out or something's happened because Frank's kind of there clutching his leg or, you know, he's just kind of lying down. Bacon's just like, oh, you know, ahoy there. Oh. And then obviously the dad's there by now. So he's like, oh, sorry, who's this? I kind of find it odd because Meryl then proceeds to respond with, oh, this is Rourke's father. This is my husband, Tom.
I think just before this bit, whenever the family set off on the raft, I think they're going down. I think just before they meet Bacon, they've come a cropper somewhere. And I think the husband ends up in the water on the first rapid, to which Streep and the son are sort of laughing hysterically while he's like splashing around in the water and he literally has to go like, you know, can someone stop laughing and help me out here, please? He's sort of flapping around. So getting back in the boat. Yeah, it is. It's then that they come round this corner having recovered and Bacon's, yeah, waiting for them. And there's this weird moment where, you know, the marital tension is made clear to everyone, kind of inappropriately. So I think there's this scene whenever the Streep family are doing some fishing or something. And of course, it's, you know, it's the classic case of, you know, Dad, do you want to come and help me fish? And the dad's busy drawing on a rock or something. So yet again, he goes like, yeah, do you know, I'm all right, thanks. I mean, he literally goes like, yeah, no thanks. And then that's it. So there's further exchanges of glances. Of course, he, you know, catches a load of fish, whatever. So there's this bit when they're basically on the same shore and the dog runs off and it's kind of, you know, snooping around the undergrowth or whatever. And the husband goes off to retrieve the dog and is followed by John C. Reilly. He's looking pretty, you know, intimidating at this stage. And we then see the husband approaching where the dog is. It's like digging or something, like whimpering. And it's just in time. John C. Reilly sort of gets his attention and pulls him away before he turns the corner and will see the body that I'm assuming the dog's discovered. So they come back, but I think it's pretty clear at this stage, isn't it, that these two have done away with the guide. I think that's pretty clear from that. Obviously, we never see the body, but it's clear what's happened.
Oh, you never guess what? You know, Frank just sacked us off, you know, bloody arsehole. And then Reilly makes us some dog shit about how Frank was an ex of his sister back down in old Tallahassee or something. And he's like, oh, you know, we had a bit of an argument. You know, used to date my sister, you see. All this just guff. Obviously, you know, the viewers have got a strong indication that that's quite not how it's gone, down.
But I think it's just short. I think it's just after this where I get the impression, obviously, that the husband is slightly wary of particularly Bacon, who does seem very over familiar every time they pass on the river. But it's only when Bacon then falls into the rapids at one stage, and it's just it's revealed that he can't swim, that the husband actually, you know, strips down to his briefs. And, you know, jumps in after Bacon and tries to save him. And while doing that, he retrieves him from the bottom, from wherever the depths. But then while he's taking him up, Bacon then tries to kill him. He tries to pull him under. You know, he grabs him and holds him down, to which the husband then punches him in the face and brings him back up. And, it, you know, it's quite an early on confrontation where you think, well, I mean, this is it. I mean, sure, the husband's going to absolutely explode and be like, oh, these two guys are dangerous. But he doesn't. It's kind of, he brings him up, puts him back on the boat, Bacon recovers, and all resumes as normal. And there's only a very brief little exchange between Bacon and the husband where Bacon goes, you didn't have to hit me, Tom. And the husband goes, yes, I did. And then walks off. Did you take, I thought that was odd, that, I mean, obviously I get, you know, from the point of view of like stretching the sort of, you know, because it's like one thing after the other. So by the time it's then revealed to everyone how grim these two are, it's obviously like there's all these compounding factors. But did you not think that that was a bit strange, that that wouldn't have been made a bigger deal of?
You know, I think to be fair, he must have been able to swim a little bit. Because if you're a non-swimmer in those rapids, well, I think you're done for, like pretty sharpish. Is that then he just sort of sinks to the bottom? He's just kind of there, like drowning, comes to, and then tries to kind of hold the dad down at the same time. It looks like Bacon's on the verge of death. He's drowning, for Christ's sake, apparently. But then he still has enough about him to sort of effectively wake up, because it looks like Bacon's just taking a nap. He wakes up, turns around and goes like, and then starts trying to hold him down. It looks like the dad's trying to sack him off and just go, God, do you know what? Actually, fuck this. Because he tries to swim back up without Bacon, and then he grabs his shirt. Yeah, it's very odd. Very odd.
It is odd. I think it's an impressive maneuver Bacon pulls off. Because, yeah, like you say, he's sitting at the bottom of that riverbed, like, you know, Jason Voorhees on one of the sequels, and somehow manages to come to and just pull off this quite, you know, energetic maneuver of holding that, basically trying to out-breath the husband who's just gone into the water. So yeah, it is slightly strange. And then you get this whole bit where it's sort of downplayed. Yeah, I think it's just shortly after this that there's this kind of scene where Bacon's doing some fishing with the top off that you mentioned earlier. And Meryl Streep is, I mean, as Tom rightly says later, you know, in the boat the next day, he says, I mean, you were literally draped over Bacon there. Which she is. I mean, she's like, she's also showing him how to fish, but she's like really kind of coming from behind, you know, enveloping him. It's very strange.
Yeah, to be fair to Meryl, I guess I've never really looked at Meryl Streep as a sex symbol. I think Meryl Streep's one of those people that always just kind of seems to have been quite old. But I think in this film, she's, she's in her mid-40s. So, you know, so she's not old, but she's, you know, she's
not
had
young.
A couple of kids. And yeah, you know, I was kind of just going like, well, yeah, Meryl Streep.
Yeah, no, yeah. She's quite a fine-looking woman. I think she does. The thing is with Meryl Streep, she does grief very well, because she can very effectively look very grief-stricken, because she has got quite a face that's quite kind of, you know, when she really puts the heat on, she can look like she's really been through the mill, you know. But yeah, in this, she's a bit more, you know, fun-loving. You know, she's obviously it's mentioned that she used to be a guide for this particular river, so you know she's obviously one of these outdoors types. But yeah, she's draping herself over Bacon. Old Tom sees isn't particularly pleased.
They've got the radio on, haven't they? And we get a snippet of a robbery that's been taking place, and then as the viewers put two and two together, go, oh, hang on a minute, you know, Frank's disappeared, that's dubious. You got Bacon and Riley just kind of, you know, floating around the place, literally. You know, they're looking a bit fishy. What's this robbery about? The whole concept of Bacon trying to get downstream. Sorry, what's he doing? I understand that they're trying to get to the bottom of whatever this is. That's fine, but why? Well, where are they off to?
Actually, whenever we were talking about where it is, Meryl Streep mentions, you know, you're on the Canadian border here. The Point Street mate, because she's like, you know, guessing what the plan is when she's trying to like get in the heads. And she says something about how, you know, you've got a getaway car waiting for you at the bottom of this river, and you know you don't want to cross the, obviously right on the border. The authorities will expect you to be crossing the border, so you're going to lay low on these rapids for 4 or 5 days, and then I don't know, from the bottom of it, get in the van. I've got absolutely no idea what they're saying.
What van?
I don't know. They said something about how there's a you know a getaway car waiting for them at the bottom. I think Street.
Oh right. God, I think I completely switched off from this. I just thought they were going for a ride down the fucking, down the river and just sort of hoping for the best.
Yeah. I'm not quite entirely sure what the logic is. I mean, surely, given the whole area is inaccessible, why couldn't they have just, instead of going this down this treacherous route where they don't know how to like use a boat, why don't they just hide in like the wilderness somewhere? Like, what are they doing down this river? But I don't know. I mean, God only knows. But it's at this stage, it's the little boy's birthday. So they all kind of, they camp out for the night and they're exchanging presents. And the father gives him a Swiss Army knife, which is, you know, we feel at this stage there's some kind of reconciliation between the family members. You know, I think has Meryl at this stage embraced her husband again? They have a little embrace, don't they?
Tom basically says to Meryl, you know, the reason I do what I do with work is because I'm trying to match up to you. You know, I'm trying to make you proud.
But on the birthday thing, old Bacon gives him a gives the little boy $200. You know, literally gives the little boy some cash in hand.
Well, it's really rammed down the throat, isn't it? Because with the Swiss Army knife that Tom gives to Rourke, I'm pretty sure it's got the price on it, which kind of says like $80 or something. Yeah. And then Bacon comes up with these two fat $100 notes. Yeah, we get it. Rourke's got a problem with his dad. He's left the fucking price tag on. So the kid's gone like, oh, hang on a minute. You know, don't like the dad. He won't even fly fish with me. You know, he's not, you know, he's not turning up to events. He's useless.
He leaves price tag on gift.
Look what we got here. We've you know, a Swiss Army knife, cool, $80. Bacon here, 200 big ones. Well, who do I like? Very nice thought. We have to give that back. No, it's mine. It's mine.
Well, it's a real, you know, obviously the old Bacon at this stage is really trying to, you know, turn the screw here. So, you know, I mean, I do actually back the dad's thing about giving the money back. I mean, it's obviously like grotesque. You know, he's giving some.
Well, you know, we get fucking Tom's loving a bit of Tom over here. Fuck, man. Yeah, we get it.
Yeah.
You know, we get it. You're a Tom guy.
Well, I just didn't at any point take any issue with this guy.
I think Tom's a bad dad, okay? I think he's a bad father. And I just don't see what you're not seeing.
Do you think he's a bad father?
Got to be a bad father in the eyes of Rourke, because it's not going to work then, is it? The whole film was binned.
Yeah.
If Meryl and him are on an even playing field before this trip, then it's just boring. There's not as much effect as there when certain things come together. And, you know, even down to when him and the dog meet each other again.
Oh, yeah.
And the dog jumps off the cliff, and he kind of goes, oh, yeah, it's the first time you've listened to me, Maggie. Oh, goodness.
Yeah, Maggie, you know, gives his face a bit of a lick, friendly lick.
If we've not got that, with, you know, the earlier scene, as we mentioned, when Maggie's not getting off that buffet. Okay, yeah, nice scene with the dog jumping off, but like, why do we need to do that? What's going on there?
It's one of these, isn't it, where like every single little detail is obviously brought back. It's in there for a reason. You know, it's just one of those.
Oh, well, yeah, well, especially the sign language. Fuck, man, we'll get to that later. Yeah. Christ almighty.
But so, yeah, you know, they have this stuff about, you know, Bacon gives them the $200, gives it back, storms off. God knows where he runs off. Does that a few times?
Well, you know, he stomps off behind a tree to then wait for Meryl to strip down, as we're going to get to in a second. That's where he goes.
Oh, yeah, sorry, no, I meant the sun, but yeah, I think old Bacon.
Oh, the sun? Sorry, I thought you meant Bacon.
No, I think they all basically go.
Oh, God, who fucking cares? You know, unfortunately, he doesn't get lost in the woods. He comes back again.
Right. And so they have this, you know, the husband and wife have a bit of a, you know, bit of a moment, and then strips down and takes a dip. And I think the dog's having a bit of a look as well. And she's busy sort of, you know, washing hair or whatever. And then it starts to rain. And then we get through the flashes of lightning, we get some Bacon and some raincoat Bacon standing having a look. You know, what do you think of that?
I guess she's effectively skinny dippy, isn't she? But, you know, does she need to be doing that? It's late at night. She's going in God knows what. Can't she just, you know, put a bit of kit on? The thing was implied that she, you know, they want to get some, you know, some stuff going. And she's effectively going in to rinse off, preparing. She sort of says, she basically goes, I'm just going to rinse off for you, Tom. You know, just you go warm up the 10, I'll get a rinse off and, we'll be good to go.
Going to freshen up, yeah.
Of course, Bacon, you know, he's there and he's like, well, yeah, here we go. This is an opportunity. Then we get the Mac on and we're good to go.
Yeah, no, he's quite an ominous, you know, and obviously, you know, given old Bacon's appearance, I think through flashing light, it's quite an ominous presence. But he's having a look. Yeah, like you say, there's only one little body of water, so I mean, it's not surprising that she wasn't going to be caught, you know, with the trousers down doing that in that river.
I'm not sure if I'd have preferred if Bacon would have tried to scuttle it off, or the fact that he just stands and just goes like, oh yeah, you know, I'm not going to do it, Meryl, don't panic.
Yeah, it would have been interesting to see old Bacon pull a Michael Myers. And just, you know, absolutely just scarper.
By this stage, you know, he's played the nice guy for too long. He's kind of going, oh, fuck this. You know, I've just given him Rourke over there, 200 big ones. Yeah. That's gone down like a lead balloon. Like, I've had enough. You know, the true colour's got to come out here. You know, I'm not scuttling behind that tree. I'm not pulling my eyes. I'm just going to stand here and enjoy the view.
Like it or lump it from Bacon. But the following day, so again, I think at this stage, they're both, obviously Tom's had his encounter with Bacon. You know, he tried to drown him. Which is, you know, at this stage is kind of old news. And he's been caught perving on Streep. So they're both in agreement that they want to try and shake these two creeps. And but the son, of course, he's still pissed off about the $200. So the following day when they're setting off, the son jumps on Riley and Bacon's raft, which kind of thwarts the plans of Streep, because she's like, well, the plan is to get away from these, and obviously the son's on the other raft. So that's great. So another instance of old Rourke just sabotaging the whole game.
Well, you get some Rourke going off with Bacon, you get some fucking music on the radio. You get some, like, you know, rock music. Or, you know, we know what fucking Bacon's like for a bit of rock music.
Oh, yeah.
That starts going off again. And then we get them on the boat, Bacon whips the gun out. Like, don't tell your parents, Rourke, but have a look at this. Starts kind of, you know, spitting the fucking barrel around, you know, like big dog, you know, got the, what's it, a Magnum 357 or something.
357 shots there, some hollow points or something. But they then land on this for lunch and the sun goes off. Well, Bacon walks off. John C. Reilly goes for a shower and under some waterfall. And the plan is, this is actually part of Streep and Tom's plan to flee from these two. They strap the two, so Bacon's gone off. Riley's having a shower and they jump back on the boat and they try and pick up the sun. They want to just throw the sun in the boat and take off.
But you get this really dramatic rowing scene, don't you, all of a sudden? He's like, yeah, quickly get in. You know, he scuttles Greg. Off and John's just there in the shower with his beer going like, huh?
Yeah.
Wade!
I mean, it should be mentioned that John C. Reilly in this is obviously a bit of a donut, isn't he? He's a bit of a dum-dum.
Yeah, he's just kind of going along with whatever Wade says. Yeah, later on when he almost loses the gun, when Tom almost gets it, you know, kind of Bacon slaps him in the face and all this sort of stuff. So, yeah, he's just on the Bacon shoe, isn't he, basically?
Yeah, you know, there's a bit of... I mean, every time something goes wrong, he's basically just sort of left going, you know, Wade!
Well, he's like a knucklehead, isn't it? It's one of those it's one of those sketches, isn't it, where he, like, sort of, you know, bangs him with the fucking hammer and goes like, oh, what am I going to do with you?
Yeah, yeah.
It's Mimsy!
Yeah, yeah, there is very much like the idiot sidekick to it. But yeah, so the Streep and Tom approach the son. He's doing a bit of fishing and they're going like, right, we'll get on the boat. He's like, no, I'm not getting on the boat. I want to do with Megan. Well, of course, at this stage, you know, the audience are going, look, my kid, get on that fucking boat. Something's going on here. Get on the boat. And of course, like he tries to like bug, like scamper off. Mercifully, you know, again, you know, I realize I really am sucking Tom's dick here, but he jumps off the raft and like, I think literally manhandles the child and like literally grabs him around the midriff.
Oh yeah, I'm pretty sure Rourke just kind of just gently pushes him and he just loses his footing.
Oh, fine. Yeah, so he gets him back in the boat, but of course at this stage, given the minor delays caused by Rourke's, we then get Bacon appearing from the shrubbery, don't we? So he goes, what's going on here? They have to come up with this non, you know, we haven't spent much time with the family, you know, we're just going to go downriver ourselves. That's all right. Yeah, no, you're not. Yeah, Bacon at this stage, this is it. This is the final. He's not going to take any more nonsense from this family. He's getting unpleasant at this stage.
John catches up about 10 minutes later, out of breath.
I thought you were trying to do a runner on us. Fine, everything's okay, you know, fucking Mimsy's here again.
But yeah, I, as you said, no more Mr. Nice Bait. No more Mr. Nice Bacon. No more Mr. Nice Guy Bacon.
Yeah,
that's quite. The one, there we go. They get into a bit of a, you know, a ruckus, and then a bit of a fight, a bit of a scuffle. And then at some point, Bacon comes out with a line, where is it? Who died and made you stud dick? Yeah, I'm not quite. I've no idea what that means. I've got no. I don't know what that reference is at all. But I think Tom's just going, you know, it's my family. It's our thing. You know, to be fair, you know, we'll send someone else down for you. You know, we're trying to be nice here, but we're gonna go here. Yeah, and he just comes out with that. I don't know, Bacon. You tell me.
I think he's obviously trying to antagonize him, isn't he? He wants Tom to react. He starts kind of like giving him a bit of, he starts slapping him around a bit, starts questioning his role in the family and all this, you know, are you annoyed because your son would rather be on my boat and all this sort of stuff? To which I think Tom then actually does punch him. And then, of course, this is Bacon's opportunity to start getting really unpleasant. And he whips out the gun. And then John C. Reilly sort of pounces on, restrains what's her name? Gail. And, you know, I was saying to you earlier, if this wasn't, because it's a 12 certificate and it's obviously, you know, it's catering for it. It's kind of, in some ways, it's kind of like a family film, family thriller. But it's like one of these situations, which if it was in a slightly heavier film, you could expect things to get really nasty. You know, you could expect that dad to get shot in the face and old Streep to really receive a full rundown.
There's a scene later as well, isn't there? After we believe Tom has been shot. I'm going to kill you, whatever it takes. Bacon sort of stands between her legs while she's sitting down and just, you know, she kind of goes, oh, you know, come on, you know, stop talking about it. Stop pretending. Come on, just do it.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure what she means by that, but.
Well, I think she's saying, you know, you could do anything with us, you know, so why don't you do it? You know, you just keep talking about what a big man you are. But it, again, more antagonizing But it's like, yeah, I think the only problem, the only criticism I have of all this is that, you know, not that I'm saying I want it to be any harder hitting than it is, but it's just, you kind of just know where it's going to go. And obviously even this bit. So, well, I mean, we may as well just get up to it. We get this, they end up going down the river and the Bacon binds them up. So they're going down the river. Oh yeah, we should mention just before this that they're actually stopped by the ranger. Old Ranger Johnny turns up.
Ranger Johnny pops over. Yeah, that's right.
He was very much, you know, hey guys, how's it going? It's like, well, Ranger Johnny, you know, Streep looks like she's seen a ghost. And, you know, the dad's busy trying to draw SOS into the sand.
He's not quite getting it. You know, you've basically just got them in a nice, neat line. They even go through the point where they start shaking hands and Baker's just there with a gun.
Yeah, well, it's really, because obviously, you know, the first warning sign is obviously, you know, Streep standing there looking like, you know, she's just had a pole shoved up her ass. You've got Bacon really pressing something into her back. And yeah, Bacon's looking very, very chirpy, very, very talkative, going, you know, oh, Streep's just showing us her old sides. And then, yeah, Bacon all of a sudden turns the conversation slightly unpleasant and sort of goes, you know, I hear it's harder for you Indians than it is for the blacks and the Mexicans. Well, what do you think of that, Ranger Johnny? So it's old perky, you know, poor old Ranger Johnny sort of standing there going, oh, I don't know. Oh.
And then everyone just starts to shake hands. They all shake hands. And then Bacon just kind of goes like, well, so you met everyone now? Huh? Yeah, I guess I have.
He gets on his boat and, you know,
he probably comments on those short shorts as well. Goodness me. There's almost some testicles falling out of those things. Pretty, you know, pretty chill.
I think this Ranger Johnny, he's got a kind of metrosexual look about him. I imagine he's probably worrying about his leg tan. You know, he doesn't want any tan lines on those legs.
This is where we get, don't we, briefly, as I said, about the whole nickname, because Meryl, she hasn't got a clue who this is. She just thinks it's some random bloke. Johnny is the younger brother of someone that Meryl used to hang out with on the rapids back in the day.
Okay.
And then I've actually forgotten the nickname, which I said earlier.
Is what, white raft? White river?
White, is it white water?
White war, that sounds about right, yeah.
And then, yes, we get that, and then, yeah, he sort of paddles off. We kind of think, you know, are we going to see Ranger Johnny again? The answer is an emphatic yes. He will be coming back again later.
And I think it's at this stage where Streep, this thing about, you know, the gauntlet gets mentioned, the gauntlet, you know, what is the gauntlet? And it's obviously like the big, you know, the big thing that has to be overcome in the last act or whatever, but it's like a stretch of rapids that they're inevitably, if they keep going downstream, which Streep had intended to avoid altogether, but the criminals need to be, you know, go past this stretch of water, which is, you know, famous for being treacherous, the gauntlet. And she's pleading with Bacon, you know, please don't let us do the gauntlet. You know, I did it when I was young, but we've got kids now. It's not going to work. So this gauntlet gets mentioned. And then, yeah, that night they're bound up and the dad escapes. He breaks free from his robes. And actually, because I think John C. Reilly's on night watch while Bacon's in asleep. He tries to go for the gun, but John C. Reilly wakes up. And then, yeah, he ends up just running off, the husband, Tom, and he's chased by Bacon, who shoot. Well, you think he's shot him off the rock, but he shoots and misses, and then the husband falls into the water, and then, you know, we don't see anything more from him.
Well,
but
how are you feeling here? You know, like, got quite a strong affinity towards Tom, you know, how were you?
Well, I think that's a kind of like, a, you know, continuing from the point I was making earlier about how, because it's actually quite a light film, there wasn't any doubt in my mind that Tom had in fact been shot. I knew he was going to come back, you know. So it was it, because at this stage also they've lost the dog. The dog's run off. So effectively the dog's gone and the husband's supposedly been killed. But like in this kind of film, like it's never going to be. You're never going to kill a dog in a film that you're trying to appeal to like families with, and you're not going to kill the little boy's dad. So I wasn't fearing for Tom's safety at this stage. But yeah, we get this stuff with. So he kind of hides out, doesn't he? And the following morning they set off and. Old Tom has clearly found a little ledge on the rock that he's climbed into and waits until daylight to then actually try and get out of the way. Because obviously this cliff face is right alongside the water. So if old Bacon sets off, he's going to see Tom hanging from the rock. So there's this quite, you know, quite good bit. I liked it when they're coming down the stream and Tom has to try and hide somewhere on the rock face. And he's like hanging on to some, you know, loose shrubbery or whatever. And he's got to hang on and not move until the raft comes past. And I thought that was quite well done, quite nicely done.
The only thing with that is I sort of noticed that when he starts to tumble, it's quite the fall as well. It could be some broken bones in that. Pretty sure you sort of see the set kind of wobble a little bit.
Oh dear. Well, we've got some rubber rocks, have you?
It's like a sheet over a bit of, like, you know, plastic or something. But I guess it's quite, you know, nerve-wracky. Oh God, is Bacon going to look up? John C. Reilly going to see him? Oh, falls in, makes a big splash. Yeah, they're kind of just looking, oh, yeah, whatever. You get from here, or we've already had it, I think you briefly mentioned it, where Meryl starts kind of having this moment on the boat after Tom's gone. She starts getting quite hysterical. It's quite unnerved.
You know, you just can't do it. You won't be able to do it. I can't do it. You know, she starts really going off about the whole gauntlet. Bacon's just kind of there going, oh, Christ. Yeah. Well, you need to get that river, love. So, you know, it needs to happen.
And then with that, there's this thing where you kind of get, she gets some whispers in his ear. And he goes like, you know, this is it. You know, I've got a kid now. You know, Tom's gone. You know, I just can't do this anymore. I can't do it, and I won't do it, and it's impossible. Okay, we need to find something else to do. And Bacon sort of just responds and just goes like, you know, you're a great woman or something. You know, you're a strong woman. And that's about it. And it's just forgotten about.
No, she does. She has a total moment on the boat, and even Rourke's sort of looking fairly disconcerted by this. You know, you've got a streep just sitting there going, and everyone's sort of going, Jesus, are you all right there? she goes to sort of turkey but... and then she comes through, doesn't she? And then and then what have we got? She gets bound up again, but no, he's insisting that, you know, they're gonna do this gauntlet, you know, whatever. Meanwhile, we get some, because we've now also got two different things going on. We've got the dad who's been reunited with the dog, who's making plans separately, and we've got them in the boat.
Tom starts turning to Rambo and just starts kind of living off the land.
Yeah, starts like literally doing smoke signals.
Starts building like fucking contraption. Meets the dog again, of course. They become pals. We get the scene, as we've said, about where they jump off the cliff. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's a slow mo of the dog leaping into the water.
Yeah. That's when you get the whole like, oh, it's first time you've listened to me, Mac. Ooh. So yeah, well, is anything of that sort of interesting before we get to the gauntlet?
I feel if they could have CGI'd a smile on that dog, they probably would have done. But yeah, no, it's wholesome, heartwarming stuff, I'd say, is what it is. But we then get this. Well, we should just whiz to the bit when Ranger Johnny appears again.
Oh, Ranger Johnny paddles back in, doesn't he? Yeah.
He paddles back just before they're about to approach the gauntlet and goes, Meryl, I can't let you do this. Yeah, no one's allowed to do the gauntlet anymore. And Ranger Johnny just absolutely clueless. I mean, he does actually say, you know, sorry, where's your husband and son gone? And she goes like, oh yeah, they've just gone downriver. So what? So they've done the gauntlet and taken off. But it doesn't make any sense, though, because it's like,
no. He's put some trousers on, thankfully. You know, he's fucking ditched those short shorts. That's something.
I think Bacon even says something like, you aren't too bright, are you, Ranger Johnny? Or something like that, you know, and Ranger Johnny's going, you're like, huh? And then he gets shot. Or Ranger Johnny takes a bullet. I kind of half expected him to come back, but he doesn't. And he takes off and he falls into the water and goes flapping into the gauntlet. And Bacon's like, gives a little wide crack as he sees the body floating off and goes, he did always want to ride the gauntlet. So yeah, the body's washed off.
Yeah,
and
it looks like he's got some sort of like bulletproof vest on. Or is it just like a pretend one?
I mean, it's a life jacket, is it?
Or is it a life jacket? Look like sort of like a bulletproof vest. I was about to say, like, if it was, then it's clearly not done its job. A life jacket probably makes more sense with the gauntlet just behind him, yeah.
I think to be fair, with these Rangers, obviously, you know, the Ranger Johnny character, it's stupid, but like, did you ever meet any of these Rangers when you're in America? These guys who like patrol these wild parks.
When I went to a couple of the national parks, there was, they were around, yeah. And to be fair, that there was some short shorts going on. They weren't kind of just mincing down the stream. They were doing like tours of the forest and kind of going, hey kid, you know, you've got the oak tree here and it's fucking huge. All this sort of stuff. I can't say I really spoke to them myself, but I on days out, on trips out to parks and lakes and stuff, they were definitely floating around, yeah.
Well, I mean, the only experience I had was, you know, when I was in New Mexico, there's a lot of wild parts there, and they are very much of the kind of the types, you know, the kind of howdy folks, beautiful day out. So in some ways the Ranger Johnny character is about right for the Ranger, I'd say. But so yeah, he goes off, and then we get they then do the gauntlet, which, you know, is well done. It's quite a drawn out scene. Like, it's obviously been talked about a lot, it's been built up, it has to pay off for something.
There's kind of a bit of a hole in this plot, because I thought the whole point is that you couldn't get past the gauntlet without being on the boat and going down it. Well, Rambo, aka Tom, just seems to just walk it. He jumps off. I'm not sure why he jumped off. He jumps off with the dog, but then gets back on land. And then when they get to the bottom of the gauntlet, when they've done it, he's there. He's got all these traps set. He's put the sign language on some fucking log for Meryl to go, oh, right? As you said before, he's flashed the old smoke signals. So he's done the smoke signals. He's then walked. Wherever he's walked to, he's there, he's got there before Bacon and Co. get there. So that means he must have walked around it somehow. He's then, I don't know what he's put on the log with the sign language. I think it just says something like about love, something love. So
yeah,
I'm not sure I was taking that as, oh, okay, what I'll do is I'll just get the oars and just kind of divvy to the left a little bit, and then I'll let Tom just drop the washing machine and flip the boat.
Well, he's arranged probably what has to be in film history is, you know, probably one of the most elaborate pulley systems, you know, ever made.
But it looks like a fucking mousetrap.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically some kind of arrangement where he's got like a tripwire in the water that whenever, provided Meryl Streep positions the boat in just exactly the right place, whenever old Tom, like you say, drops the bag of the washing machine or whatever he's got there, it's going to flip the boat up.
You've lauded Tom this episode, and yeah, well, to be fair to Tom, he's pulled it off, because whatever he's done there, it works an absolute...
Well, it's a treat, yeah. Well, that's right, but he flips the boat over, and then this sort of final confrontation bit. Meryl Streep ends up with the gun. Bacon is, you know, he's caught in the water with his trousers down, and he's going like, you know, you've got us to the bottom, I'm not going to kill you, just let us go. And then she, you know, the gun doesn't fire or something, to which she then breaks character and goes like, yeah. Right, kill the boy, kill the husband, you know.
Oh, so no, this is the thing here. I think this is actually done on purpose by Meryl. I think she does this on purpose, you see, because she has a look in the chamber before she, you know, she aims the gun at Bacon. He then goes on, as you said, he goes on his spiel about, I'm sorry, you know, we're here now, everything's fine, your family's here, no hard feelings.
You're always going to ask yourself, you know, did you have to do this?
Think about that, Gail. Which it seems that she goes to sort of shoot in the air. As you said, Bacon then just goes, oh, that's it, yeah. Ha, got it.
Ah,
yeah,
so that was deliberate, was it?
I think so, yeah. She gave Bacon one more chance to sort of see if he, you know, if he meant what he was saying about, let bygones be bygones. We'll all go our separate ways. She's gone, right. Well, fuck you, Bacon.
And then puts one in his chest. Yeah, that's fair enough. I didn't actually appreciate that. I noted the bit when she puts the gun in the air and I was like, oh, yeah, what's... Yeah, that kind of glazed over that. But yeah, kills Bacon and that's it. And the police arrive, arrest old Riley and you know, husband and wife sort of make out.
Well, we get some cringe fest, just to really finish off with Raw. They're hugging, they're embracing, the dog's there, you know, everyone's happy. And then the police officer's kind of go, oh, all right, so, you know, your mum, you know, got you down the gauntlet. You know, that's some achievement, goodness me. And your father, you know, what did he do? Oh, he saved our lives.
He saved our lives.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's just this kind of Hollywood thing where obviously all of these things have got to be rounded off in like the same way. This is one of the problems with this. And it, you know, it's the same way like in Schindler's List, you go from like all this horrendous stuff in these concentration camps. And then at the end, you have to have this whole bit where it's, you know, all these people who are, you know, thanking old Schindler for what he did and putting the rocks in his grave. And the end of Saving Private Ryan, they always have to end on this kind of slightly cheesy note, which, yeah, I know this film's full of cheese, but it's just, you know, do we really need, you know, Rourke's take home at the end of this? No. Could have just ended with Bacon getting shot and floating up.
Well, he had to go full circle, didn't it? Like, we couldn't have just had him embrace his dad and go, oh, you know, yeah, I guess we're, you know, thanks, Dad. That was really nice of you. You know, I was really, you know, upset when I thought you died. And I guess, you know, everyone's going to make a bit more effort when we go home now. Maybe you're going to draw less pictures and we're going to just spend more time together. No, we had to get a fucking shit little whiny kid.
He's done life.
Oh, yeah, cheers, Rob.
You've criticised me for, you know, being too on Tom's side, but I think you've been a bit harsh to Rourke. I don't think you liked Rourke from the start.
No, I didn't, no. He just became more and more unbearable as the film went on. Yeah, no, I thought, yeah, what can I say? Yeah, he was just annoying, really annoying.
Right. I think kids in these kind of movies are usually fairly difficult.
Very hit and miss, isn't it? I think if you go for most films that involving kids, it depends what they're doing. You know, it depends under what circumstances they're acting and what their character's doing, but oh no, not for me. And to be fair, you know, I think it's kind of like they knew as well because they called him Rourke. You know, who the fuck is called Rourke? You know, maybe called the dog Rourke.
No, that's fair enough, yeah. What's your sort of closing statement? What do you think?
There's certain scenes, as it was a 12A or a PG-13, there are certain scenes where in a 15 to 18 film, it could have got a bit more, you know, a bit more lively. Could have been some rape, could have been some more violence.
More fruity, yeah. It could have been almost like a sort of deliverance arrangement, couldn't it?
Well, goodness me. You've just taken the word. I was just about to say, when it looks like a sort of like a 12A deliverance. A lot of it's very similar. The basic arc of the story in the film follows deliverance to a T.
Yeah.
Minus the squeal, squeal.
Yeah. You know, unfortunately, we don't have any of that, but it was
some squeal, piggy squeal for Rourke in the woods. Maybe would have, you know, yeah. basically a 12A deliverance from Ben. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, fair enough. I think I've already said a bit at the beginning, you know, just fairly tightly wound, decent tension, decent script, good performances. Meryl Streep, undeniably, you know, very good actress. You got Bacon, good. Sean C. Reilly. Yeah, I enjoyed it. That hour, 50 minutes flew by for me.
Where would you put it for a Bacon performance? You know, where are we putting it?
I think, to be fair, for Bacon, obviously it's not a particularly serious minded film, but there is quite a lot demanded of Bacon in that he has to go from actually being quite charismatic and charming, genuinely charming, to then becoming basically a total psychopath.
He murders Ranger Johnny.
Ranger Johnny gets it. Yeah,
he's trying to just tell Bacon not to go down the gauntlet.
Hi, Bacon. Yeah, no, it's great.
But yeah,
that's it. All right, okay, right. Until next time. Bye.
Cheers.
You'll find me on social media just trying to post sort of witty and humorous things. So all that and more can be found over at Twitter, Instagram and Facebook at Film Floggers.
Cheers.
Hello and welcome to What's Our Seat Number. If you're listening to this trailer, you're deciding whether or not you're going to listen to this podcast.
Good.
But chances are we've lost you already.
No, come on, Matt.
It takes what, like 10 seconds for people
you're
to lose interest
defeatist.
In things?
You're
I am
being
not being defeatist.
Defeatist.
They've
you
gone
are.
Already. It's for
now. Well, now they are because we started arguing, so we've both sort of driven them out.
Well, go
right,
on
just
then.
Go on
tell the dead air who we are.
Okay. The dead air.
The dead air.
The cadaver.
The people who aren't listening anymore.
I'm taking control. You introduce yourself, and then I'll introduce myself, and then we'll talk a little bit about what we're doing, right? It's going right, to sound more right, professional right, that
okay,
way. Go.
Okay, okay. I'm Johnny Gross. I am a filmmaker and a film fan and fanatic and obsessive.
Good. Very good. That was very well done. Very professional. You sounded like you're in control and almost like you know who you are.
All right, then. And who are you?
I'm Sai. I'm a 3D artist and a game designer, a film fan. I'm your brother as well.
Really?
So we're going to be talking about some of our favorite movies and hopefully some of yours as well. There's going to be trivia behind the scenes.
Do you want to tell the listeners why we've called this podcast What's Our Seat Number?
You really came to the right person with fielding this question because I feel that I can take this story and really bring it to life. Okay, so one time we went to go and see a film in the cinema and I asked, what's our seat number?
Fantastic.
Was it good?
Yeah.
I did it for you.
It's great. If you want to hear more, you can check out the rest of our episodes. We're hosted by Podbean, but you can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music or Audible, TuneIn, Alexa, Listen Notes, and now on iHeartRadio, Player FM, and Podchaser. So pretty much wherever you get your podcasts. Please don't forget to review, like, and rate, and keep listening, because the more you listen, the more we'll be able to produce. Bye.
Ta-ta.